first impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Or a monthly basis, not a daily spam like so many do, which I think is ridiculous. I hate that myself. But while you're there, if you're so inclined, you want to help us out, we certainly appreciate it. We depend on you. So while you're there, if you don't mind, hit that little handy-dandy donate button or the GoFundMe page and help us reach our front fundraising goal for the next year. We are trying to come up with about $10,000 for the next year. That helps pay for everything here. It also gives us money to help with investigations, open records, all the other stuff that goes along with it. So if you can, please help us there. In the meantime, you guys that are new to the show, 858-683-1326 and 502-805-0334 are the phone numbers to call in. For those of you in the listening queue, we certainly appreciate you. Hit that little number one on your dial pad, and we'll get you on air as soon as possible. And for everybody else, the live chat is now open. You can sign in right here at BTR. You can sign in using your Facebook and or Twitter accounts as well. Welcome. I don't know where Ed Martin is. He should be here by now. He is not, so he's running just a little bit late for whatever reason. And that's okay. We've got a whole lot to go on tonight. We've got a whole lot to talk about. Getting a message in the chat room from one person there that's saying that they're not getting any audio for some reason. However, they're in the chat room, which is kind of ironic. I'm not sure what the problem would be with that. So I guess we'll find out soon enough. Anyway, moving forward, a lot going on. We'll get into the Ferguson situation here in a few minutes. Barack Obama, of course. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel resigned today. There's a lot behind the scenes with that. So many things. It's incredible. I want to start with one quick story, though, locally. And I tell you, it's a story that we've been following at LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringston.com. It's our story. Nobody else is really touching on this. For those of you who don't know, there has been a lawsuit filed against Mayor Greg Fisher. It was filed almost a year ago, against him for libel and slander of former Ford employee and government relations expert Jay Morgan, who was terminated from Ford allegedly because of comments that Greg Fisher made about Jay that were lies. It's that simple. I don't know any other way to sugarcoat it for you. Those are the charges. Greg Fisher has tried at least three different times to have this case dismissed through Judge Mitch Perry's court. Something is strange there. We don't know what the real deal is. Greg Fisher has done everything he can to try to get it dismissed, and once again, his dismissal was stopped in an order signed by Judge Mitch Perry earlier this month. He says that the court has previously denied Fisher's motion based on the same argument and the same set of facts. So he dismissed him and denied him one more time. What has always made this story so interesting, however, is the fact that Ford Motor Company interjected themselves into this lawsuit, even though they were never named as a party to this lawsuit or in any way involved. It's a very, very serious situation, and we've been wondering why Ford involved himself, and we have the answers for you. But first, how are you, Mr. Martin?
Oh, tired, Mr. Springsteen. Working too hard trying to pay them bills.
Well, you know, somebody's got to. You need to work a little harder, though. I need somebody to pay mine.
sure, sign me right up, pal.
There you go, man. There you go. Now, we're talking about the Ford versus Morgan lawsuit, and I tell you, it got interesting today, and the reason it's back on the radar, for those of you who don't know, Jay Morgan, just a real quick background, Jay Morgan worked for Ford Motor Company. He was assigned to Louisville, Kentucky, as a governmental relations expert. He put together the workforce training facility and everything else we have talked about and written about ad nauseum. It's the same thing that Lexington Mayor Jim Gray is now utilizing in Lexington, is Jay Morgan's plan. Greg Fisher and his sister Lynn Fisher decided they didn't want to use the plan that Morgan put together using federal funds that were already available because they wanted to force the state to give them money. So I guess, you know, for the Democratic way, apparently, in this state anyway, seemingly, so they could take the money and glut the money and do whatever they wanted to with it, and Lynn could get all the money out of it to JCTC and her own employment agency, which is baffling to me. Well, long story short, after a year and three different shots at it, Judge Mitch Perry has finally ruled that they can move forward with depositions, and the case is now open and moving forward. The Ford Motor Company fired Jay Morgan as soon as Greg Fisher pulled the plug on the workforce training facility. Ford mysteriously fired Jay Morgan. Come to find out, according to the charges, allegedly Greg Fisher and Reverend Kevin Cosby made some detrimental lying comments to Ford Motor Company about Jay Morgan, and that's why they let him go. Now, the problem has been, Jay, of course, filed a lawsuit against Greg Fisher for libel and slander, and because it cost him a 24-year career. The reality is, what's really interesting here is, though, that wasn't enough. Ford decided to interject themselves into this case and actually have hired their own attorneys, including Joel Frocht right here in Louisville. And essentially, these guys appear to be the ones leading the way on a lawsuit that doesn't involve them. They tried to get the motion to squash and everything else. It was denied. The judge ruled against them. The reason this story becomes relevant again is because of a little-known thing going on today that wasn't very heavily promoted with GLI, Greater Louisville Link. Imagine these guys being involved, right, Ed? Well, apparently Greater Louisville Inc. Now, this is a separate question I've got to ask before we get back to this. But truthfully, Ed, you're a business. So if you join an organization whose job it is to promote the best interests of a business and to promote a good business environment that you can work in, succeed in, and you know, grow in, would you think that that business was pretty legit if they were spending the money that you're paying in dues putting together a dinner to celebrate elected officials?
Well, you know, the ass-kissing game does work, but I don't recall if GLI, if we were ever members of it or not, but I know we're not now because, yeah, we just didn't, when we were in Louisville, we didn't get much out of them.
Well, there you go. And here's the thing. A GLI is sponsoring, and they put together this big old elected officials appreciation dinner. So they put together an elected officials appreciation dinner for today. Now, why does this tie back into Ford and everything? Well, since the judge has now ruled against Ford and Greg Fisher and said that Jay Morgan can go forward with depositions, really there's only one question Greg Fisher has to answer. And that answer is a very easy one. Did you make this statement to any Ford official, yes or no? If he answers yes, Greg Fisher is guilty of libel and slander. Jay Morgan wins his case against Greg Fisher. But when Ford terminated Jay Morgan, they also entered into a non-disclosure settlement agreement, and Jay Morgan got paid. How much that is, obviously, I don't know. It's a non-disclosure. But anytime, I mean, it's beyond logical, because anytime you go into these non-disclosure settlement agreements, there's always money exchanging hands. So Morgan had to get paid something, and he signed a non-disclosure agreement. So if that's the case, and Greg Fisher says, yes, I said this, has no bearing on Ford whatsoever, Greg Fisher is going to get stuck with damages. If Greg Fisher says, no, I didn't say this, then the Ford officials lied when they fired Jay Morgan, so the non-disclosure agreement was not mediated in good faith. Therefore, that non-disclosure agreement that signed with Jay Morgan is null and void. Jay can talk about anything he wants to talk about, and that is the situation we're in, and that's why Ford has interjected themselves into this case. One of the two are lying, and it's one simple question that now has to be answered in a deposition, and that's why Ford is involved, and that's why Ford is scared. What is Ford scared of? I'm not sure, but they're so scared that for this GLI event today, which is nothing more than, I hate to even say it, elected officials appreciation dinner. What this essentially means is business, just give us your money. We don't give a shit about you because we deal with the elected officials, which has been GLI's mantra all along. But Ziad Ojakhli, we'll just call him Zod, all right? Ziad Ojakhli is Ford's vice president of government and community relations. He actually flew into Louisville for this meaningless event at GLI. And as far as I'm concerned, the only reason he flew in here was to talk to Greg Fisher personally. During the whole lawsuit, every appearance at court has been attended to with Greg Fisher's legal team and Ford's legal team sitting at the same table. If Ford has even talked to Greg Fisher or his legal team about this non-disclosure settlement agreement, Ford has already actually violated the terms. So this is very serious. Ford is scared of what Morgan knows is the only thing I could come up with. We put a story out at edspringston.com and at louisvillepolitics.com today. You guys can read it for yourself, complete with links. But I don't think I'm far off on the conspiracy theory or the collusion, Ed. What do you think?
Well, I'll be honest, busy today. I'm going to have to read your article. But you know, major corporations like Ford, you know, you're not sure what they're up to. I mean, they're definitely professionals. So unlike a lot of, you know, people who can win an election by a few hundred, few thousand votes against, you know, a nobody. But I don't know. You know, you can bet your ass Ford is gonna, if they did goof up, they're gonna try to cover their asses and possibly settle and make it go away. Gosh, I do tend to agree with you. If Ford is talking about the terms of how they dealt with the termination, then yeah, they could they could be in violation of it. I'm sure there might be something in there, you know, in the event of legal proceedings. Or, yeah, but the other problem you run into is client lawyer confidentiality. Like, well, you know, if their lawyers are talking about it, and somebody says, well, did you talk about the settlement agreements? And this is, well, we claim confidentiality. So, I mean, it could be a kind of mess. But it is, you know, I certainly look forward to everybody getting to the bottom of it because, you know, certainly you don't want to find out your political, your leadership is behaving like fifth grade kids in a whisper campaign. And by the same token, you certainly hope one of the major employers is not acting like, you know, amateurs or something like that. But something seems like it's up, because then by the same token, if one of those two are doing that, you don't want to see some guy get their 24-year career destroyed either. So, I mean, unfortunately, we'll probably see half a dozen years go by before we get any answers, or they'll settle out of court and there'll be it'll be gag ordered or something like that. So,
well, what's really interesting, I mean, there are so many dynamics to this whole story. What's really interesting is Ziad Ojakley, Zod, if you will. Zod has never been to Louisville for anything. We've had major events here that would concern Ford Motor Company, and all kinds of different things, including, you know, the rollout of the new Escape, all the other different things that Ford is involved in here. He's a government relations guy, the governmental operations, community relations guy. You know, those are the times that he should be here to meet with the elected officials. But he goes to a nondescript appreciation dinner for elected officials that most companies will normally send a flunky to. You know, a low-level junior guy who don't have anything better to do. It's Thanksgiving week. Let's send his ass to Louisville to go to this stupid appreciation dinner if we feel it's necessary to be there. And in most cases, you don't see, you know, Ford people and UPS people and things like that at these events. It's that small scale. So the fact that he is coming here as a Ford Group vice president tells me that they're concerned about doing anything else in writing or anything. So he's going to speak with Greg Fisher one-on-one and face-to-face. And, you know, that just, to me, just raises the level even more. You know, Morgan was fired because of statements made by Greg Fisher, allegedly. We have to use that term. I don't think there's any alleged to it, but we have to be legal here. You know, and all of these things have happened since then. Now that the judge has decided that Fisher and Ford can no longer delay using the dismissal tactics, I think there's a lot of concern here for them. They're scared of what Morgan may know, and they're scared of what Morgan may say. And Morgan, quite frankly, at this point, he might actually hold the keys to bringing down this entire Democratic kingdom here in Louisville. Seriously, because, you know, if this goes big, I guess really at this point, it almost appears like Ford is trying to figure out what's the best course of action here. We know that if we continue going down this road, we're going to get beat in court, and that's going to cost us millions of dollars. Greg Fisher doesn't care, and it's really another thing here that we, the people, have to be aware of. Greg Fisher is using our tax money and our tax money resources to help defend him in a private lawsuit. This lawsuit was never brought against Greg Fisher, the mayor. It was never brought against him in his official capacity. It was never brought against the city of Louisville. This is brought against Mayor Fisher on a personal level, and Greg Fisher has been using the county attorney's office and a whole host of county attorneys to help him in his defense here. So that's a waste of our taxpayer resources, and I think there should be some ethical questions involved there as well. But it's going to be really, really interesting. And in the interest of fairness, I did reach out to Zod, and I got an email saying that he would not make himself available. He would continue to be unavailable to me for any questions. So, the way it was worded was very obvious and clear that they felt like they had to respond so they couldn't get nailed without responding. But it was also very clear that they really hope I never contact them again, and that's okay. That's all right with me. I don't care. That's normal in this situation. But it's an interesting story going forward we're going to pay attention to. I think most of you folks will like it as well. Moving on, Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel resigned today from the Obama administration, Ed. Any idea why?
Needless to say, theories abound. I think one of them is that, you know, numerous miscalculations later with ISIS on the move as they are, I think, you know, Hagel was brought in to be the guy to transition out of a war footing that we've been on for so many years. And like I say, ISIS got a little out of control, a lot out of control maybe. And word is right now that the person that may be coming in to replace him is a bit more hawkish. So, you know, being a somewhat anti-war libertarian, I hear that and I think, oh, Lord, you know, are we bringing in a new Secretary of Defense or whatever that's gonna crank things up a little bit on the war machine? Are we getting ready to, you know, are we going to upgrade and go after ISIS, you know, boots on the ground? What all are we doing? Are we making some changes that you know, it concerns me. It's like you say, we're bringing a hawk in, and no matter what, we're bringing new personnel in that
right.
could give us, you know, could give the administration the ability to say, well, you know, this new secretary is a little more hawkish, looking at things a little different, and maybe boots on the ground where we got to go. But I'm a little concerned about it on that angle.
I'll be honest with you, I'm concerned, but not as concerned maybe as most people are. You know, really truthfully, according to the New York Times, the Obama administration asked Chuck Hagel to resign because they didn't like comments he had been making since August regarding ISIS, just as one example. You know, Chuck Hagel went out on a limb in August, and it's the first time he'd ever stood against the president. And it's really interesting because Chuck Hagel is a Republican. You know, well, I would say a rhino Republican in name only because I don't see anything he's done that would lead me to believe that he really is. However, you know, he called ISIS an imminent threat to every interest we have beyond anything that we've seen back in August. And that was at the same time the Obama administration was basically saying that ISIS was nothing more than a kindergarten group trying to get attention. You know, it was clearly a contrasting thing, and nobody really paid much attention to it or did a whole hell of a lot about it. Simply because, you know, we're right in the middle of the midterms. Now that the midterms were over a few weeks ago, all of a sudden Chuck Hagel resigns. A lot of people, including myself, believe that now that Obama is basically sitting alone, standing alone, a lame duck president, Congress will be against him in January on both sides of the aisle, that, you know, getting rid of Hagel as a Republican Secretary of Defense, getting rid of Hagel only 2 years into a four-year term, you know, is very telling. It's almost that we expect Obama to take some sort of another power grab, if you will, through the Defense Department. It's going to be interesting. You know, even PMSNBC was quoted as saying that an Obama administration official told them that Hagel was not up to the job. That for the remainder of Obama's term is going to demand a different kind of focus, whatever that focus may be. And that, to me, was probably one of the clearer indications that we have to worry just because of that threat from an insider. So it's going to be interesting. And, of course, Obama and him today played off likely he hadn't been fired, blah, blah, blah. You know, so we're going to figure out. But it's interesting, too, that as much as Obama said that Hagel had not been fired, he also went on record as basically saying that Secretary of Defense had been in open talks with him within the last 2 weeks in order to iron out a resignation, a mutual resignation. Well, within the last 2 weeks, what happened 2 weeks ago? So I think it just reinforces what we're talking about, that there's going to be a power grab here by the president, unforeseen, when it comes to national defense. And I, for one, if there's a concern I've got, Ed, that would probably be it. Would you agree?
Yeah, and like I say, he's going to bring a new person in who maybe doesn't think independently and will follow a script. Like I say, my concern is if they're going to follow a script that's going to lead to boots on the ground and a more active, engaged role. I mean, granted, ISIS does need to be dealt with, but it, you know, when everybody's thinking the same, and as the saying goes, when everybody's thinking the same thing, then nobody's really thinking. So that's what concerns me, is if they'd be maybe bringing a, you know, a hawk in that's going to justify whatever use of force, whatever, you know, use of personnel that the narrative calls for.
Well, and that should be a scary thing. And, you know, when you mention boots on the ground, a lot of people aren't paying attention to another little story that nobody really paid attention to. Is a Barack Obama has actually signed paperwork after saying that we would not have any people overseas, you know, in Iraq or whatever we're at. In 2015, he quietly signed a little order just a couple of weeks ago that ensured we would have boots on the ground, 10,000 of them minimum, through 2015. So he's already extended that stay, and the media, of course, didn't report any of it. So that's already going to be a lie that's going to be coming out in the next couple of weeks. It's very, very interesting and very, very telling that Chuck Hagel would be resigning at this particular time. And, you know, there's so many things going on. I don't even know where to begin anymore. You know, Obama clearly is trying to usurp as much power as he possibly can over the next 2 years. And you got to remember, Chuck Hagel himself, when it comes to defense, Chuck Hagel himself has been beside Barack Obama. He's never, ever went against Barack Obama or done anything that would lead anyone to believe that he didn't care for Barack Obama until ISIS. And in August, he let it slip that he thought ISIS was such a grave threat. So that's when the problems began. They can't be rectified. That's why he's gone. He's the next scapegoat. But I am concerned. And I have to tell you, it's not just Chuck Hagel's resignation that concerns me. When we talk about the additional troops, at least 10,000, that are now going to be overseas dealing with ISIS all the way through 2015 and into 2016 as of today, that's another concern, because the only way you're going to get control of ISIS is to put boots on the ground. 10,000 boots clearly are not enough boots on the ground. We are going to go back into a full-fledged military operation to get control of ISIS throughout Iraq and the surrounding area, Syria, Turkey, all of that. We're going to invade. There's no doubt in my mind about that. We have to. With that in mind, is this maybe Obama trying to set up his legacy and make the calls himself with somebody that will sit there and basically lick his boots, which Chuck Hagel clearly hasn't done since August? What do you think?
I think the biggest thing going right now is that they do need a change in strategy, and they're going to bring in a new Secretary of Defense or whatnot, and some new staffers, new generals, and they're just going to, you know, amazingly, I'm afraid they're going to build a consensus to the point that they say, okay, well, this is what we have to do. And, you know, I look at it, it's just history repeating itself. We don't, God, you know, as Dr. Ron Paul would say, you do this, you're going to get blowback. It's like, I just sometimes wonder if we're ever really going to learn. We just, you know, we're like a grasshopper caught in a spider web. Every time we twist, every time we contort, every time we change the plan, seems like we get knotted up even further. You know, we thought Syria would get involved in Syria was a good idea. Well, look what we did. We spawned ISIS. Now that ISIS is up, now we're looking at making nice with Syria, making nice with Iran. and it just keeps going on and on and on. And I just think lacking a clear and concise and sometimes difficult foreign policy, which sometimes is non-involvement, it's difficult to do. Stand back and watch some stuff and look at people to sort it out. But, gosh, I just got a feeling it might be like a Supreme Court. You know, they load up the Supreme Court. Whatever president wants to load the Supreme Court with the people that they want to load it with. And I'm just hoping that the Defense Department is not getting loaded up with people who are going to follow the narrative and get us all bogged down in this again, you know, not learning anything from the George Bush years. You know, getting us involved in one place and then moving it to another. You know, we fine, attack Afghanistan. That's fine. That's where Al-Qaeda was. But then we had to go getting involved in Iraq, you know, and then start all that crap up. So I have this bad feeling that they're basically grooming the battlefield and getting the people they want in to say what they need them to say to follow the narrative and escalate. I just got a bad feeling. After all the, and especially with all the liberal friends that you and I have, the way they blew up at George Bush, for escalating in Iraq and continuing having Afghanistan be the longest war you've ever been in. Seems like they're not learning any lessons. It's like just got a feeling that they're getting ready to start it all back up.
Well, the sad reality is, though, I mean, you know, we can go back to George Bush and going in and all that stuff, but the sad reality is once we were there and we were engaged, we should have finished the job. I mean, that has been the biggest problem that I've had with Barack Obama's presidency. He decided he wanted to pull everybody back. We didn't have anything stabilized. You know, the mission was not complete, if you will, no more than it was when George Bush flew and landed on an aircraft carrier saying mission accomplished, and then 10 years later we're in Iraq. But no, it's really strange because, you know, this is completely contradictory to any kind of military intelligence whatsoever to pull those troops in the first place. And now what's going to happen is we're going to have to go back in there because of ISIS. We allowed that group to survive. We allowed that group to grow and build. You know, some people would even argue, make of it what you will, but there have been some arguments over that I've heard already, that ISIS was allowed to grow to this extent to justify sending in the military and creating another war zone, if you will, for the United States to get into, military defense spending, military defense contractors, all of those things, you know, to keep the money rolling. And this is Barack Obama in collusion with that, making it happen. Now, I wouldn't go that far, but, you know, it's very interesting when you look at that, and when you look at the dynamics into play at this time. You know, we look at everything that's been done behind the scenes, like signing in and ordering more troops there that nobody knows about, so Obama can't be held accountable to it. You look at all the attention that keeps getting shifted everywhere. I mean, our heads are turning left and right so badly over the last year anyway. It's been incredible. And we're going to, you know, tell you what, we're going to take the bottom of the hour break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to get into some of those head-turning events. It's not just Iraq and military and defense and everything else that's a problem right now. You know, we've got all of the things that are finally coming out about the IRS. Lawsuits against this president have been filed in the last week or two. So many things are getting ready to go crazy. It's all deflection, and I'm trying to figure out if we can make sense of that. So we'll talk about it when we get back. You're listening to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Network. Don't forget, as always, call in numbers 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. for you guys in the listening queue. We appreciate it. Just hit the number one on your dial pad, and we will get to you as soon as possible. I tell you, Ed, you know, we're talking about our heads just being spun in so many directions, left, right. I mean, I almost feel like Linda Blair in The Exorcist, man, with my head doing a complete 360 anymore, trying to keep up with everything. Well, a couple of the biggest things that have gone on over the last week or so, one of the biggest stories nobody's really spending a lot of time on is the IRS. You've heard it mentioned, but they're not really talking about the implications. But we now know that at least 30,000 missing or so-called lost, destroyed emails from the IRS with Lois Lerner have been found. They're sorting them out now. Apparently, we don't know exactly what they're going to reveal, but at least 30,000 missing emails of Lois Lerner were found on some backup tapes. You know, these backup tapes were supposedly recycled, and these emails were supposedly gone. And miracle of all miracle, the IRS officials who went up on Capitol Hill and said, these things are destroyed, we have no way to get them, suddenly were able to come up with something. Isn't that a glorious day when these government officials get caught lying and then scramble to come up with something to cover their butts? So it's pretty interesting, but apparently there are about 744 disaster recovery tapes from 2009 to 2011 that have been uncovered. At least 30,000 emails of Lois Lerner and the IRS scandal are in there. You know, we don't know to what extent. So what do you think about that now that some heads were getting ready to roll? It's really a miracle. And the reason I say that is because Republicans won. Republicans won the Senate and the House. In January, there's nothing that can be hidden that won't be found. And now all of a sudden everybody finds stuff that's been hidden for at least 2 to 3 years. I mean, is that not a miracle? Have we not already seen a change?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think of Lois Lerner's emails being found. It's like, come on, we knew they were never lost because the NSA had copies of them, right?
Exactly.
But, you know, it's like when Thomas Massie pasted the guys from the IRS and stuff, and he talked about the statistical probabilities of all these computers going down all at the same time and losing all their data at the same time with no backup at the same time. You know, it was just... It was laughable, and I think it's just like the immigration thing. It's just like Hegel. It's what kills me is we're sitting here and we're having this discussion after the election. It's like they kept it all bottled up until after the election, and we all knew Lois Lerner's emails would show up.
Well, see, that's the thing. They wanted us to think that they wouldn't, but I agree with you. I think we all knew it if things were done right. I mean, there's no way, and you know, I'm not trying to use this as a bad example, folks, and it's going to come off that way, but let's look at things realistically. Your personal laptop computer, one computer, or your personal desktop computer, I should say, or even your laptop, one computer, one hard drive, that hard drive crashes and you're being told all the data is lost. The FBI could come in. If you're a criminal... Or, you know, let's say you're a child pornographer of all things. All right, bad example, sure. But, you know, they can come in, they can take your hard drive, and they can find all the pictures and everything else and convict your ass in court. And that's with one centralized computer. I mean, there's no way this government, for me, that was always the smoking gun. There's no way the government can tell me that you have all of these backup tapes, you have all of these backup servers, you have the NSA, and all of these different people involved, and there's no way in hell they could find this, that everything was completely destroyed en masse through all of these different backup systems. You don't have a backup system on your laptop or your desktop in your home. They could certainly find it there without a backup, so surely to God they could find it here. I'm glad to see it. What I'm really hoping, though, you know, what's really disturbing is the lies and everything that have gotten us to this point, and then I see people like Al Sharpton out there with $4.5 million in tax debt, not in jail. His paycheck from PMSNBC is not being garnished like yours and mine would. There's been no repercussions against somebody like that, just as there have been no repercussions against the IRS in general for pulling this crap that Lois Lerner put together. So, you know, how do we the people have any faith in an IRS, and how can we the people... Or I don't even know how the courts can actually defend the IRS and let the IRS make any judgments against anybody After a fiasco like this, and after knowing that people like Al Sharpton are walking around free and clear and still allowed to do so just because they're politically connected, the IRS has no credibility. Is there any way they can ever get credibility back? And if not, it's time to disband the IRS, right?
Well, let's be realistic. You're not going to get the IRS disbanded because, you know, that's how the government pays its bills at this point. But beyond that, credibility, I mean, let's be honest. The IRS never had much to begin with. A lot of people out there would tell you, you know, nobody, the IRS doesn't even, when you call the IRS for advice to get the, you know, and filling your taxes out, half the time the advice is wrong. So, I mean, you got an organization that doesn't have any credibility to begin with. Nobody likes them to begin with. And as far as Lois Leonard is concerned, I mean, I think everybody knew, she and all her techies, that they were going up saying, no, it really did crash. They were basically, people like Tom Massey, they were basically told they were full of shit. And now it's panned out. So, yeah, no, to me, I look at it like, yeah, no biggie. It's like, the only thing that amazes me sometimes is that in the news cycle, that these things get out. Just, and like I said, we knew it. It's not a mystery that it gets out after the elections. I mean, the elections went bad enough, and the only thing I wonder about is if it had the elections not gone poorly, would it have gotten out? You know, would they?
Yep.
Would, because right now it's like, well, it went pretty bad for the administration, so they probably figured, well, what the hell? Won't do any damage now. Go on, let's get Hagel out of there. Let's learner emails get out there. It's like let's get it out now. And maybe in 2 years from now, when the next election cycle passes through, maybe people will forget about it. So there, in a way, it seems like a lot of these stories are coming out at the opportune time to put as much distance between them and the next election cycle as possible.
Well, one thing's for sure, Barack Obama is protected, and that's all that matters. Let's go to the phones. Paul, you're on the air.
Good evening. Ed Springsteen, you made a great point. And I don't know if you realize just how great it was. When you're talking about folks having suspicions, you sound like another national radio guy when you make statements like that.
Yeah,
but I digress.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. Go ahead.
but your point about people not being able to trust the Internal Revenue Service, I think that point is not limited to the Internal Revenue Service. I believe that the Internal Revenue Service is just one of many examples of government agencies that have lost the faith and trust of the citizenry. And I just think that the government is going out of its way to keep doing things to keep us from trusting the decisions that are being made by all of these people. I have almost no trust that my government telling me the truth about most matters. I really don't trust them to tell me the truth. I don't.
Well, actually, the majority of America agreed with you. I mean, we also had some polls out. You know, they were doing all these different polls going into the election, and more than half of the country agrees with you. You know, as they were polled going into November, I think one of the last polls in October asked, do you trust the government? And I believe the answer was 53% said no. So, you know, I mean, flat out said no. It wasn't sometimes or anything else. And I think you're right, because when you look at everything going on today, it's progressively gotten worse. This is not a Barack Obama attack here, folks. I want to make sure we're clear on that, because when we talk about distrusting government, this has been a systemic behavior through a long period of years. This isn't just a Democrat or Republican thing. It's a uniparty thing. I want to be clear there, because when we look at this, I mean, Bush had questions that people always had against him. Bill Clinton did some questionable things. Ronald Reagan and George Bush won, but prior to him did. All of these things, I mean, I would honestly say that a lot of the distrust in government began after the Jimmy Carter years. Whether you liked Jimmy Carter or not, and Jimmy Carter was a failed president to be sure, you knew that Jimmy Carter was at least honestly doing what he thought was right, even though he was a miserable leader doing so. When you look at everything that's happened since then, I think you're right. And when you look at today, I think we just went to the next level. I mean, for example, you know, this whole divide and conquer strategy from the elected elite to we the American people is what keeps them in power. Let's look at Obamacare. I'm going to move through a couple of these stories as we go, Paul, because I like the situation you just brought up. But when you look at Obamacare, for example, the House Republicans filed a lawsuit on Friday saying that the president had overstepped his bounds because of all of the different things that he added to Obamacare, delaying the individual mandate and the other decisions that he did through executive order or executive action, you know, usurped the Constitution and usurped the law. And I think that that's a case that the House Republicans are right on, and I think the Supreme Court will agree with them. But as far as the rest of the country is concerned, this is just an attack against poor President Barack Obama because he's a black Democrat president. They don't want to look at the realities. When you look at the illegal immigration that edict that Barack Obama put out last Thursday, by Friday morning we already had reports that Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who everybody knows in this country, is filing a lawsuit against the president for overstepping his powers and bypassing Congress to do what he was doing with illegal immigrants. And forget this undocumented worker crap, folks, or undocumented immigrants. And I tell you, here's one for you guys. I want you to think about this just off track for a second here. But if we're going to call illegal immigrants undocumented workers, then why aren't we calling, you know, thieves undocumented shoppers? I mean, really, we can change the terminology for anything we want to. But, you know, so Joe Arpaio was already filing a lawsuit. On Friday as well, two Tennessee legislators are filing a resolution and demanding that Tennessee Governor Bill Haslam file a lawsuit against the Obama administration on behalf of Tennessee and illegal immigration because of his policies. So what we're seeing here, we're seeing the Fast and Furious scandals, the Benghazi scandal, regardless of how it worked out. You're seeing the IRS scandals. Now all of a sudden they're finding 30,000 emails. We're seeing Barack Obama acting alone on illegal immigration. We're seeing Barack Obama acting alone on Obamacare. We're seeing Chuck Hagel leaving today as Secretary of Defense because Obama wants somebody in there that's going to toe his line. What we're ultimately seeing is all of these different scandals from this president. This is just one president. This is one president. And it's clearly obvious to me to see that over the last 30 years, it's been a progressive leap to get to this point. But Obama clearly right now is taking it to the next level. You guys agree, disagree, what?
Oh, I think he's pushing it. I think he's just doing. But in all fairness, I think Obama is just he's taken, you know, what George Bush has done, and he's taken what a lot of the others have done, and thought, well, they've done it, he can do it. Now, to be fair, part of the reason some of, you know, like executive orders did stuff that he does is because we have Republicans up there whose sole proclaimed purpose was to make him a one-term president. But not to legislate, not to help people with quality of life, you know, nothing like that. Not to have a more constitutional government. But I do think, to some degree, a lot of the problems that are caused by the fact that there's, you know, a Congress up there that simply their objective is to have no objective other than to throttle whatever the president wants to do. So I mean, I do think that level of immaturity, that level of obstructionism, that sort of forced his hand on himself. Absolutely.
Well, I understand you're talking about the Mitch McConnell statement.
Well, hang on. I have a counterpoint to that. I have a counterpoint. I normally don't get into really serious disagreements with Ed Martin because Ed has some really well thought through ideas. But seemingly implicit in his comments just now was the obstructionism was an exclusively Republican thing. Now, I'm not a Republican. I'm a big critic of the Republican Party, both nationally and locally. But you cannot convince me or any other clear-headed thinking person that Harry Reid has engaged in obstructionism to the nth degree and has basically gotten away with it because of all kinds of complicity. Now, Harry Reid's obstructionism actually involves not the Republican agenda, but his own colleagues. Harry Reid has refused repeatedly over many years to bring up bills that his Democrat colleagues have introduced simply because he wanted to rule with an iron fist. When you compare Harry Reid's iron fist rule with Mitch McConnell's, McConnell pales. He pales in that regard.
Well, and give McConnell a little bit of credit here, too, though, because that was one of the most boneheaded statements I'd ever made coming out of Mitch McConnell's mouth, bar none. I agree with you there, as far as the statement was concerned. But as far as the reality is concerned, Harry Reid has only passed 39 bills through the Senate. He has refused to bring hundreds of bills to the Senate floor that were passed from the House in a bipartisan fashion. He has also refused to bring bills to the floor. He has also refused to bring bills to the floor that his own Democratic colleagues in the Senate have sponsored. He has screwed his own people, too.
You're making my point.
So, well, yeah. I get that. But here's the thing with McConnell. As much as we can want to sit here and try to say that statement was a defining trait that created gridlock, the gridlock was already there. And for the record, when we had the government shutdown in 2012, who was the one who brought him out of it? Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell is the one who brokered the deal to bring the government shutdown to a halt. So as far as proving, you know, as far as making a boneheaded statement like that, he was absolutely wrong. But as far as proving he can work in a bipartisan manner, he's done that. So, you know, again, for me, it's the uniparty at work. Both sides are going to play some obstruction to some degree. But I'm not going to sit here and be willing to say that it was Mitch McConnell and the Republicans who created all the problems. It's been a joint effort by both parties, in my opinion.
Oh, no. And I say it's a joint effort. I mean, granted, Barack Obama didn't do himself any favors when he made his, we won him comment. You know, it's like, right. They're all acting like children. That's what's so aggravating about it. It's just like, guys, there's so much work that needs to be done, yet we're, you know, the only work they're focused on is politics. So, you know, executive orders, I mean, you know, just more politics. I mean, tactically, it could be forcing Congress's hand to say, well, you don't like it, come up with something better, which I certainly hope they do. But, you know, it's just any more politics is just, it gets so discouraging, like you said, a uniparty, whether they're actually, you know, uniparty or not, whether they're actually hate each other or like each other, I don't really care. They just simply get up there and they go through the actions, the Robin's Rules of Order and all that other crap, and they just get in each other's way. I mean, it's just like the movie Dumb and Dumber playing Fetch Your Ass. It's just, come on, guys, get to work. If the Republicans don't like it, then give us a better plan. Give us a plan that works, something that we can, you know, that's not overly complicated, not overly inhumane, and, you know.
But see, that's
again,
another example, though.
I look at it, too, to Paul's point. The Democrats control both houses, you know, the Senate and the House and the administration. They control it. They passed Obamacare on cloture. Why the hell couldn't they get immigration reform done? There were millions and millions of illegals in the country at that point in time. Why didn't they get it done then?
Well, you're absolutely right.
Around and now he's got to do this while he's still, the Democrats actually still control the administration, you know, the executive and the Senate. They don't control the House. So the question would then come, it's like, okay, why pass this now before you have a chance to sit down and talk with the Republican House and the Republican Senate? Why do it now and just sort of throw sand in the gears before the Republicans actually formally take control?
Well, it is. But let's look at the illegal immigration, for example, since this is on everybody's plate right now. You know, let's look at this, for example. You know, as you pointed out about Obamacare, everything was done under cloture and everything else, that's fine. But when you look at illegal immigration, the House did pass an immigration bill. Harry Reid refused to bring it to the Senate, and Harry Reid has actually taken the extraordinary step of not allowing Republicans any debate, discussion, or amendments to any bill that he does bring up. He has essentially said, you're not allowed a voice, and neither are your people. That is probably one of the most childish, divisive things I've seen in one of the houses of Congress in quite some time. But I want to get to this illegal immigration, because here's the thing. This is the thing, and this is what I like about Tennessee's their two representatives, State Rep Andy Holt out of Dresden and State Senator Mae Bevers out of Mount Juliet in Tennessee. They want their governor to file a lawsuit against the Obama administration on behalf of Tennessee with illegal immigration, and here's why. Article 2 of the United States Constitution, according to these folks, is explicitly clear on the powers vested within the executive branch. Essentially what they're saying is that Obama lacks the authority to execute even the slightest change in policy. The Constitution delegates President Obama the power to make suggestions concerning policy and nothing more. And when you look at this, their biggest concern is, according to Article 2, and their concern, that the president is now commandeering state resources. He is doing that because in order to push the agenda that he wants to do, federal government isn't paying for this. The state resources are going to be paying for this legalization. They're going to be the ones paying the money. So he is basically taking, as president of the United States, a federal authority and saying, I have the right to tell you how to use your resources in your state. He's usurping states' rights. And I think, from my perspective, that is probably one of the best examples of just what's wrong with some of these executive orders and actions this president has taken. Agree, disagree?
The focus on so much on Obama, I think is misguided, and it also makes sure that the problems never get resolved, making him the bad guy, despite the fact that I don't care one whit for his policies and his lack of leadership. The fact of the matter is that when partisan politics became the dominant power in our elective system, and that happened many, many decades ago, that's when we, the people, began losing control. If you go back to the very first Congresses, did they have, for example, the power to attach one bill to another solely for the purpose of passing it? No. They voted on the bills straight up, okay?
Exactly.
And those representatives, when the first Congresses happened shortly after the formation of this country, those representatives took it as a point of pride to show the world that they made good decisions. So if they felt strongly about a particular issue, they would vote yes or no, depending on their conscience. Today, that's all but absent. Today, all these votes by all these elected, all 535 of these people seem to vote politically. What's best politically? I'll vote against this because if I don't, this one constituency will give me hell, and then I'll vote for something else because another constituency will give me props. That's not the way it first started. So the whole system has been corrupted and co-opted, even though the founders recognized the inherent potential for that when they disdained the whole concept of political parties. And where are we today? We're in the grip of political parties.
This country, and
because of that grip, this country is faltering badly.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Ed Martin.
Yeah, I tend to agree, and, you know, speaking in terms of clean bills, is what we once had, kind of makes you want to go back and slap the crap out of the first guy who attached a little pork or a poison pill to a bill, you know. But, yeah, I agree. I mean, in some cases, I think, you know, Democrats certainly come up with fine bills. Republicans come up with fine bills, and then they'll load it up with pork. But then, as Paul said, for political purposes, a lot of times they put the poison pill in it. They'll put something in it that is basically it's not good legislation. It's just something they throw in there if the other side dare votes for it or dare votes against it. It's like, oh, yeah, well, we're going to use that in a 15-second campaign ad, which is, you're right, that's all political parties. That's, like I said, just come on, guys, give us some good, clean legislation. Fix, you know, get in and fix a few problems and quit doing it, making it about the parties. And that is the God's honest truth. You're 100% right. It's the corporations and the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and that's pretty much where it's at. The voters lose out, and the voters know they lose out, and that's why they become disengaged, even in an election like this year, which was bitter, and the spending was huge. Their voter participation rates are continuing to fall.
Well, right now we have what's called corporate politics in America. I mean, that's the bottom line. When we look at executive orders and executive action and things like that, though, really, truthfully, Barack Obama is really maintaining pace with George Bush, if you will. You have to go back to Jimmy Carter. I mean, we can go back to Franklin Roosevelt. He is the one who abused that privilege more than anybody. He averaged almost 291 executive orders and actions per year. You would have to go up to Jimmy Carter in recent years. He averaged 80 a year. Ronald Reagan, in comparison, 47 a year. George H.W. Bush, George Bush the First, as we call him, 41 a year. Bill Clinton escalated and did 46 executive actions a year. George Bush, 35 a year. And Barack Obama is averaging almost 34 a year. So, you know, the amount of executive orders and actions have greatly decreased on an annual basis, on the annual average, since the days of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But we have to start asking ourselves, though, seriously, at this point, to what extent are the orders and actions? I mean, there's some things. It's like, you know, Ronald Reagan was accused of granting amnesty and all the other things, and, you know, he did the same thing Barack Obama is doing. Well, the biggest difference with Ronald Reagan in that equation is the fact that Congress had already passed an amnesty bill. They had just, you know, accidentally not added the part about making sure the parents and the children stayed together with the family. Reagan corrected that through executive action and order on behalf and, you know, of the Congress, who had asked him to do that so they wouldn't have to debate the damn thing again. So that was all done working together with the executive and the legislative branch. You know, that's the difference with what Barack Obama is doing now. But I find it interesting that you know, as Paul pointed out, and it's a very good point, we are into overdrive, folks, so stick with us if you want. Ed, I know you've always got something to do. If you need to go, please feel free.
Yep. I got it.
All right, buddy, I appreciate it. Thank you. I'll see you next week, okay? Thank you, sir. But, you know, we have to look at this in play. You know, to what extent are these executive orders and actions going? Most executive orders and actions leading up at least through FDR were done to, you know, through FDR's administration. It was done with federal funding and things like that. Now we have the situation where, you know, a lot of these actions are usurping states' rights, which is exactly what the Constitution, you know, was designed to protect states' rights. You know, this was a union, not a monopoly, and that's what the U.S. appears to be going for now, and that is really what concerns me the most, is that we're going to destroy state resources to be used on something that the federal government says we have to. Not that we haven't in the past. I mean, let's look at it. No Child Left Behind, all these other unfunded federal mandates, you know, that are being pushed on states to pay for. How do we correct that, Paul?
The answer is simple and complex simultaneously, okay? It simply requires a state to say enough is enough. Draw the line and refuse to comply with federal mandates that violate the law. Now, that's easy to say. It's not necessarily easy to implement, all because of all the political implications that go along with that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because there will be hell to pay among certain constituencies. No question about that. So, but somewhere, somehow, somebody has got to do it. First, suffer a lot of grief, no doubt about it.
Well, and I think that's what we're finally getting to. I mean, Joe Arpaio out of Arizona has already filed a lawsuit. Tennessee is trying to get their governor to do the same thing. I think if we see more and more states come on board like that, Tennessee actually surprised me. I expected Arizona to go this route, but I also expected Texas and your southern border states to do that. Tennessee was one that really surprised me, but Tennessee, to me, makes the most logical argument. It's just fascinating to me when we look at scandal after scandal for the last 6 years. We look at what I consider to be an illegal usurpation of powers by the president. You know, when I look at the gridlock in Washington because of the fallacies of those like Harry Reid, and I'm sorry, folks, I would love to sit here and blame Mitch McConnell. I'm not a Mitch McConnell fan, but this has been Harry Reid's Senate, and he's made it quite clear that that's the case. So, you know, we've seen so much gridlock, so many things not getting done. Now we're going to be sending more boots on the ground into Iraq to handle ISIS. We're going to get into Syria and Turkey. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And at the same time, America is going to get broker and broker and broker, and we can't afford to do anything now. You know, those are all legitimate concerns to me. And when we throw 4.5 million illegals into the mix, when we continue with the lies from the IRS, you know, Paul, you had mentioned earlier about distrusting government. I don't think that this government has given us any reason to trust them for quite some time, and I think it gets worse every day.
I think that's where we're at.
In agreement with that. Yeah, in order to, if our society is based upon a value in which people give their trust to another entity, whether it's an individual or a company or in this case government, based on the performance and behavior of the other party. The performance and behavior. It's said that you don't automatically get trust, you have to earn trust. And I think the way our government has been behaving for, good Lord, for quite a while now, there is no reason to trust them. There is no reason. They may be the authority. They may carry the big stick. They may be able to make somebody's life a living hell. But there is no reason to trust them. And that puts United States government in particular and every other form of government here in this country in the same league as these little tin horn dictators and tyrants around the globe throughout recorded history. Every single one of them have found a way to consolidate their power and then use that power abusively upon the people that are being governed. Every single one of them. And we're not only on that road, we have arrived, and it's been going on a while. It's been going on a while. You can see that as evidenced by the policing agencies. Take your pick, whether it's your local county sheriff or the FBI. These policing agencies have adopted that kind of an attitude. Your civil rights doesn't matter to them. They're going to do what they want to do. If you don't like it, sue them.
Well,
you're
right.
Take the complaint into, let's see, if you sue the FBI, you take it into, oh, that's right, another branch of government, the United States court system. Good luck getting an unbiased and fair hearing there. You've got the judge, jury, and executioner, as well as the prosecutor. And our system tells us that we're supposed to trust these people to render a fair and unbiased verdict.
We certainly know better than that. Yeah, we certainly know better than that. And speaking of trusting the people and police and all the other stuff, last thing for tonight, I just want to bring up, folks, Ferguson, Missouri. The grand jury decision has been made on Friday, or it's the Thursday of last week. I told you guys it would be made over the weekend. I missed bad day. They're going to make the announcement at 9 o'clock tonight. just in time for the Thanksgiving massacre, as far as I'm concerned. But what's really going to be interesting with the grand jury decision is this. I fully expect the grand jury to come back with no indictment against Officer Darren Wilson. And quite frankly, based on the available evidence that we have had, I think it's the right decision. But what's going to be really interesting here is already today, in anticipation of this verdict, you know, I've been paying attention to a lot of the boards and a lot of social media and everything else. And you're seeing a disturbing trend, and it's already going to be made racial. The grand jury is racist. Before the verdict has even been announced, there were people everywhere saying the grand jury is racist because in Missouri it takes 9 out of 12 grand jurors to agree on whether to indict or not indict. Well, miraculously, in this grand jury, you've got 3 black people, 1 man and 2 women, and you've got 9 white people. So it's already assumed that the 9 white people are going to vote for the innocence of Darren Wilson and the 3 black people are going to vote for the guilt of Darren Wilson. So the grand jury has decided everything based on racial slant before we've even heard the decision or even heard how the grand jury voted. So, you know, it's going to be crazy in Ferguson. To those in Ferguson, you know, to the residents of Ferguson, go in your house and lock the doors. Because as we know, a lot of the problems in Ferguson have been going on because they're coming from Chicago, New York, and all across
outsiders.
The country are the troublemakers.
You betcha.
It's the outsiders. So, yeah, I really hate to see what's going to happen with that tonight, but I'm really disturbed by what that's going to mean going forward. Any comments on what you think is going to transpire, Paul?
Well, I'm in agreement on the verdict. I heard a news article today that says rarely do grand juries ever come back and indict a cop. I mean, it is probably, I think the right term would be extremely rare, okay? And the only question that I have is all of this scare tactics about the entire United States going to erupt
with 25 different cities getting into riot mode, it's not going to happen. That is not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Well, that's all
that's
started
all
by Al Sharpton.
Tactic.
Yeah, that's all started by
that's,
Al Sharpton.
It's not going to happen. Yeah, it's not going to happen. It's simply not going to happen. Let me tell you, the folks in Ferguson that know the details of that shooting, they know that Michael Brown was a thug. They already know this. They know this. So what happens to thugs on the street when they behave in thuggish ways? They get hurt or worse. And this guy got hurt. Max,
you make bad decisions. Yeah, you make bad decisions, you get bad results. That's just the bottom line.
Correct.
I just hope, my prayers go out to the city of Ferguson and community of Ferguson tonight, because I tell you, all hell's going to break loose here in a couple hours. And we'll be watching and staying on top of it. And I'm sure we'll have some comments on that coming forward on Wednesday night, actually. Dale will be here tomorrow night. Paul, thanks for joining us, man. I'm going to get into some final thoughts real quick. Folks, here's the deal. We have so many things that we continue to talk about and we're distressful about. And I'll be honest with you. We have a right to be. We have a right to be. But this country wasn't founded on robots who conformed. This country was founded on the ideal that we were all free and had the right to make our own decisions. But there's also responsibility that comes with those decisions. Right now, in my opinion, our government is not on the right path, but we have empowered these people to make the decisions that they make because we continue re-electing them. By telling them that they have our vote, we're telling them that they have our confidence. And yet the majority of the people don't trust the president. They have a low opinion of the Congress. You have to ask yourself why. It all starts and stops with us. When we look at all the things that go on, the Morgan versus Fisher case right here in Louisville, is this collusion between a government entity and a private business? I think so. When in the hell has a private business like Ford, GE, UPS, name any of them, when in the hell has a private business ever interjected themselves into an individual lawsuit, at the expense of a former employee? Most business will not even rationalize, talk to you, or even anything to do with former employees. So why would Ford get into this with Morgan and Fisher? There's something behind the scenes we don't know about. Why the policies of Barack Obama? There's something behind the scenes that we don't know about. What's going to happen in Ferguson tonight? There's something behind the scenes that we don't know about. We suspect, but we don't know. The reality is this. We're never going to know everything. But the one thing we do know is the path that we're on, no matter where you're at, whether you're in Louisville, Kentucky, St. Louis, Missouri, or you're sitting back being victimized by the federal government, I think most of us can all agree, and we all know, that it just isn't working as it now exists. And we, the people, have the power to change that. And it's up to us to assume the power that our forefathers gave us, to employ that power. It makes no sense to me. Now, when I say power, I've got to be real clear here because we are talking about Ferguson. I mentioned them too. Let's be real here clear. There is no power in going out and rooting and rioting and looting and destroying your own neighborhood and your own business. That's idiocy. For the people in Ferguson who have been doing that, if you look at the videos and you watch what's going on in the news, they're all black people. And what is the stereotype? Do these people not have any pride? We continue to talk about black pride. We can talk about African-American pride. But that is what's being shown on your news sources, including CNN and NBC. You don't see a crowd of white people out there screaming and hollering and looting and rioting because of this situation. But in every situation, you tend to see a pattern of behavior. It's the black folks that are shown as rioters and looters. Why would you want to have such a negative impact and have such a negative thought about a group of people? That is what promotes part of the division between us. And that is what has to stop. And I hope that the good people of Ferguson, Missouri, realize that tonight after this thing is out there. I really, really do. I had to backtrack to that for a moment. But I tell you, that's it for tonight, folks. Tomorrow night, Dale the Truth will be here at 7 o'clock as normal with his Tuesday night Truth Show. I'm sure he will have a lot to say about the fallout from the Ferguson verdict. I, of course, will return Wednesday night at 7 o'clock with this show, the Ed Springsteen Show. Thursday night, Thanksgiving night. Put note on your calendars for those of you guys who always tune in. There will not be a live show Thursday night. I repeat, there will not be a live show Thursday night. We will run a repeat or a best of show. You know, for once, I'm going to take a holiday off and spend it with the people I love. So I apologize if that creates a problem for you guys, but Thanksgiving night, there will not be a show, so we will have a show uploaded if you care to go back and listen to podcasts. That's it for tonight. We'll see you. I'll be back on Wednesday. Tune in to Dale tomorrow. Have a great night. Thank you so much. God bless.